Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 419 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Fast Food Eddie Chambers.
I love that name. That's one of my favorite names. Thank you. I got a shout out there. Hey, I got to give him a thanks for that. You know, hopefully, I'll see him in person, and I'll say, God damn. I wish I could actually use that shit, but I can't use it after he said it, so whatever. But I'm good, man. How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Just a little backstory for the listeners there. When Eddie was heavier, I think it's fair to say, David Hay said rather than Fast Eddie Chambers, he should be Fast Food Eddie Chambers. But these days, the very slender Eddie goes by the name of Eddie the Very Fast Vegan Chambers. So yeah. That's the new name.
I can't say it was that David Hay was the reason that I changed my diet, but nah, it was for health reasons, man, for to be honest. But at the end of the day, yeah, you know, motivation is motivation, however you get it, whatever. So
Did you say anyone can get it?
Oh, any, of course.
Oh, there we go.
Anybody.
It's Eddie the Vicious Vegan. All right, man.
All right, I'll take that.
Right, there we go. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. This one went down at the Holiday Inn in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. It took place last Friday, October 20. Just one fight to mention, that rematch between the two super flyweights, Marcel Braithwaite, 15-3 with a draw going in. Now 16-3 with a draw, a TKO in round 9 against Ilyaz Ahmed, who's now 10-3 with 3 draws. A real shock, actually. It was quite a close fight. I think Braithwaite was winning it, but it was quite a close fight. There was a lot of, you know, tight rounds. Obviously, the first fight between these two men ended in a draw that Braithwaite should have won. And this time, it was just against all the odds. He caught Ahmed with a shot and just, yeah, had him hurt, and he just didn't recover from it. I think he had him down twice, if I'm not mistaken, prior to the stoppage. And that is the first knockout of Marcel Braithwaite's career. And Ahmed had never been stopped either, so that was a real shocker. I mean, you know, for that fight to go the distance, the odds on that fight going the distance were 1 to 10. So it was probably something around about 7 or 8 to 1 for there to be a knockout in that fight. And Braithwaite, like I say, first career KO, unbelievable. What a way to win a rematch as well. Yeah, it was for the vacant British and also the Commonwealth super flyweight titles. All the best there to Braithwaite moving forward. Moving now to Germany, this one went down at the EWS Arena in Göppingen, Baden-Württemberg over here, Firat Arslan. He's now 55-9 with 3 draws. I think he's now highly ranked in the world rankings at the ripe old age of about 54. He got in there with Edin Puhulo, who's now 23-2. I believe he'd only been the distance once. He'd knocked many people out and also been knocked out in his one loss. But yeah, he got knocked out here in round 6 against Firat Arslan. That one was for the WBA Gold World Cruiserweight title. And then, yeah, moving to the York Hall Bethnal Green. This one was live on Sky. Let's talk about the undercard first. I'm going to be brief on this one here, but let's touch on it. We're going to be speaking to him in a few moments' time. Sam Gilley, he's now 17-1. He's the new Commonwealth super welterweight champion. He was able to get in there and take the belt away from the champion, Louis Green, who's now 16-4 in what was an absolute fantastic fight. Green down once in round 5, unanimous decision over 12 rounds for Sam Gilley. Like I say, we'll be speaking to him in a few moments' time, but I'm going to run through this as quick as I can because I've got a lot to say when he gets on the line. First round I gave to Louis Green. It was a Gilley round for most of it, but then he got hit, he got hurt, his leg stiffened up, and Louis Green ended that round very, very viciously, looked really good, and, you know, he stole the round, really. I was a little bit worried about how Gilley would come out in round 2 after kind of the bell going at the right time for him in round 1, but actually, to his credit, Gilley came out and he bossed that second round, everything behind the jab. Gave him round 2, round 3, round 4, then in round 5, that's when he managed to drop Green with that peach of a left hook to the body, and that was a 10-8 round there in the 5th round. I gave Sam Gilley the 6th round as well. Round 7, Gilley got hurt with about a minute to go in that round, and it was a big minute, man, and Gilley was starting to look dog tired. Green had been looking tired for many rounds. I gave Green that 7th. It was another big round for him, and I just wasn't sure how Gilley would stay on his feet for another 5 rounds. Rounds 8 and 9 were Louis Green rounds, and I felt that the tide was starting to really turn in his favour. And then Sam Gilley found a second wind and Louis Green was super tired. I think Green landed like one shot in round 10 and that was it. So he lost the 10th. He ended up losing the 11th. And then he found something huge for round 12. He hurt Gilley several times in that final round, but Gilley managed to get through the fight. Unbelievable fight. True York Hall style classic. And one of the, you know, one of the fights of the year, in my opinion. Certainly for York Hall. Certainly for the small hall. You can't really call it small hall, can you? Because it was a sky card. But, you know, for York Hall, I mean, there's always a ding-dong at York Hall. And this is going to go down with the best of them. But certainly, for me, contender for Fight of the Year. Really happy for Sam Gilley, obviously, friend of the show. My scorecard in the end, 115-112. I think the scorecards from the judges were a little bit disgraceful, actually, because they were very wide for Sam Gilley. Also on the card, Mikel Lawal, now 17-1. He's lost his a unanimous decision in favour of Isaac Chamberlain over 12 extremely painful rounds to get through. Isaac Chamberlain now 16-2. It was for the Commonwealth and British Cruiserweight titles. Isaac Chamberlain, I don't want to say desperation, no urgency in his work, you know. He decided to make it extremely boring. And this is the thing about Isaac. I mean, look, the guy's a friend of the show. He's been on before. I wish him nothing but the best. But my God, he's a cruiserweight, right? Which is obviously the division just below heavyweight. I feel like you need to either be quick with your hands or a big puncher. And actually, you know, that's the case of all boxing weight categories, right? The two most important attributes is speed and power in boxing. He doesn't have either of them. He's not very quick with his hands, and he doesn't really hit that hard. And it was just such a frustrating 36 minutes of boxing. It was so safety first, and I don't really know why. Lawal barely landed a shot. I think he probably lost every round. He was frustrated. And Isaac Chamberlain, I mean, there was no urgency. People were leaving York Hall early. People were changing the channel at home, and it was just possibly one of the most boring fights I've ever seen. I think he could have probably stepped on the gas and maybe got him out there or made it exciting, but it was, you know, it's not one of them performances from Isaac that makes you want to see him again, even though he won. Like I say, his two losses have come to guys that went on to become world champions. This guy's career really shouldn't be where it is. He should be, you know, getting bigger fights. He should be in a better place than just picking up a British title here. And at that, you know, I was going to say vacant British title. The Commonwealth title was vacant. The British he has took away from Lawal. But what I'm trying to say is it's just super disappointing from Isaac Chamberlain. Wins a fight, dominates it, but I don't really want to see him fight, you know, next time out. He's not left me excited for his next one. Obviously, his personality isn't the greatest either. I think he's a nice guy, obviously. I know the guy a little bit. He's a nice guy, but he doesn't have like a, you know, one of those personalities that's really exciting either. Like, there's nothing going for Isaac Chamberlain, you know? There's nothing going for him at all. The inactivity, I don't know, man. There's a few things as a boxer that you can have that brings the eyes, brings the excitement. It's power, it's speed, it's good looks, it's, you know, a wild personality. It's a chiseled body. You know, all of these things make people want to watch you. And he has none of them. But all the best to him. Like I say, he's a hard fighter to beat, but a style that you don't really want to see. Also on the card as well, it should be mentioned, Karis Artingstall with a statement, actually. She's now 5-0. Her opponent, Vanessa Bradford, had never been stopped. She's now 7-5 with two draws, but she was stopped in just the second round. She didn't come out for round three. Really, really impressed with Artingstall because I was super sure that she would once again go the distance. I didn't think she would get her first career knockout here, especially because Bradford had been in there with the likes of Alicia Baumgardner, you know, Tiara Brown, Michaela Mayer, Chaim Michoy, and never been stopped. And those girls are much more established than Artingstall, much bigger punches than Artingstall, and I was very surprised. I mean, Artingstall caught her with a shot, I think put her down in the first round. I think she might have even gone down in round two as well, but I just couldn't believe it. It seemed like she never recovered from the first knockdown, but what a shock. And then also on the card as well, Mick Hennessy Jr., he's now 11-2 with a draw. He lost on points over eight rounds to Joe Laws, who's now 14-2. Yeah, you know, another good fight. Joe Laws only had 12 days notice and he was very tired in the ring. He was fighting in spurts. I actually think Mick Hennessy boxed smart at times, but other times he let Laws get inside way too easily, let him walk right into range, abandoned his jab, and Laws at times was walking him down and just winging in these big hooks, and Hennessy was pulling out with his chin in the air, getting hit way too much. And he got old manned and outworked. And fair play to Joe Laws. But yeah, it wasn't a good look for Mick Hennessy. You know, being his dad, I would be quite proud of him. You know, because I think he was in a big step up there. And they didn't really need to take that fight. But it's a lose-lose, you know. Because if you beat him, well, Joe Laws is no good. He lost to a journeyman. You know, he only had 12 days notice. It was expected. But if you lose to him, then this is the outcome you get. A lot of people losing interest in him now, unfortunately. But I think there were some things he did which ticked a few boxes for me. I'd be proud of him. But yeah, it's a bit bad, isn't it? You know, you look at the ceiling now and it's not looking high for him, to be totally honest. What else do we have? Yeah, I think that is it for that card. Moving now to the Echo Arena, Liverpool. This one was live on DAZN. Let's start with the undercard over here. Khalil Majid, he's now 12-0. It was quite a competitive fight until he managed to get the TKO in round six against Tom Farrell. Farrell down once in the fifth and twice in the sixth. Seemed to all come to an end very quickly for Tom Farrell, now 21-8. I actually thought Tom Farrell was worth a small punt being the underdog. I didn't think Majid had really boxed anyone of note and wasn't really noted as a big puncher, so I gave Tom Farrell quite a chance. But yeah, I think he's a little bit shot now, to be honest with you, Tom Farrell. But yeah, not a great showing from him. But credit to Majid, I don't want to take nothing away from him, but I expected more from Tom Farrell. Campbell Hatton now 14-0. He won by disqualification because his opponent got disqualified in the eighth and final round. I didn't actually see the fight, but from what I've heard, it was quite a close one. Jamie Sampson now 9-3. He was DQ'd for persistent holding after being deducted a point in the fifth and the sixth round. And then, like I say, DQ'd in the eighth and final round. Moving up the card once again, Peter McGraw now 8-0. A unanimous decision against the undefeated Fran Mendoza, who's now lost his O. He's now 17-1. That was over 10 rounds there at Super Bantam. This was a really good fight. Akib Fiaz now 12-1. He was pulled out in the corner after eight rounds. He didn't come out for round nine. So a KO win there for Reese Bellotti, now 17-5. It was for the vacant Commonwealth super featherweight title. Fiaz down once in the eighth round. I'm going to talk about this one here. I'm going to talk about this one here because Fiaz started sharp, but by about round four, Bellotti had warmed right into it. And I think Fiaz, I won't say slowed down, but I think Bellotti just warmed into it, you know, and it sort of started to get, not even get into a rhythm, but he kind of adapted to Fiaz's style. He kind of, you know, he got into range a little bit better, got, you know, through the shots, and he seemed to kind of get in the position that he wanted to be in, Rhys Bellotti, by about round four. I was shocked to see that he was a 5-1 in play, not underdog, 5-1 in play for a knockout for Rhys Bellotti by round four. Obviously, some people know that I've got a boxing betting group on Telegram that you can join for free. And I actually sent a message at that point and said, this guy's 5-1 for the KO. It's well worth it. You should jump on it. And anyway, 15 minutes later, and in that time, I think it had gone up to over 6-1. But anyway, 15 minutes later, so about four rounds or so later, Bellotti, yeah, finally really turned the screw. He'd hurt Fiaz several times up to that point and managed to pull off the upset win. I say upset win. I think he actually went into the fight as a slight favourite. But yeah, Fiaz goes down in the eighth round. The towel came in from Jamie Moore. This is where it got quite controversial. The towel came in from Jamie Moore and the referee kicked the towel out. And tried to give Fiaz a minute between rounds because the bell had gone. So the referee kind of kicked the towel out the ring and tried to take him back to the corner and give him that minute between rounds. And for me, obviously you didn't see it, Eddie, but the referee should never be kicking a towel out the ring. I think that's cheating, actually. It's quite sickening. Jamie Moore, the trainer of Akib Fiaz, I mean, if he decided to send Akib Fiaz out in that next round, that would have meant he'd have gone back on a serious decision that he'd made to save his fighter in the first place. But thankfully, he didn't send him out and, yeah, went down as a corner retirement. But, I didn't like to see that from the ref. I can't remember who the ref was now, but I hate that. That's happened a couple times where the referees in Britain, where the referees thrown the towel out the ring or kicked it out. And that boils my blood because that's not the referee's job, in my opinion. That's disgraceful. You know, the referee doesn't know the fighter better than the trainer does. And the main event, Jack Catterall, friend of the show, now 28-1, a unanimous decision over 12 against Jorge Linares, now 47-9. He's decided to retire off the back of that, Jorge Linares. He goes down as a boxing legend. It was for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title, only Linares' second fight at the weight. We've seen him get stopped in a round the last time he stepped up to 140, but here, got put in a bit of trouble a few times in the fight, but nothing major. And a lot of people jumping on Jack Catterall as well because they expected him to probably get the stoppage. I thought he'd probably get the stoppage. I didn't think he'd go 12 rounds with Linares, but it's come back to bite him, you know, because I said it on Twitter as well last week. I did a tweet saying that this is a lose-lose for Jack Catterall because you beat this guy easy. Well, Linares isn't what he was, blah, blah, blah. And if you struggle with him, then it doesn't look good for you, you know? And that's basically what's happened. He didn't really struggle with him, but just the failure to get him out of there is a bad look. And like I say, if he would have blasted him out in a round, everyone would have said he's finished. So it's a lose-lose. I didn't think there was much point in the fight. It's just a waste of time, in my opinion. But I like Jack Catterall. I think he's the uncrowned, undisputed champion at super lightweight. I think it's disgraceful that he doesn't have a title. But, you know, I'm only telling the truth. I don't think there was much point in this fight here. But all the best to him moving forward. And yeah, moving now to the final card to mention. It went down at the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California, USA. It was live on DAZN. Two fights to mention over here. Areli Moschino, she was the IBF World Flyweight Champion. She's now 32-4 with two draws because she was actually KO'd in round five of a scheduled 10 two-minute round contest against Gabriela Fandora, the sister of the Towering Inferno, now 12-0. And yeah, Moschino down twice in round five. The corner stopped the fight. Fandora, the new IBF flyweight world champion. She's massive for the weight as well. I think she's about 5'9", 5'10". for flyweight, which is crazy. And yeah, I mean, for her to win by knockout, that was big odds there. I think she was about 5-1 for the knockout. Machino's only been stopped, I think, one time in the past, and it was a long, long time ago. I think before Fundora even made her pro debut. And yeah, statement made. I always thought she'd win because she showed such promise since turning pro, but I wasn't too sure she'd win by knockout. And yeah, credit to her for getting that, because that was a brilliant, brilliant statement win. And yeah, there's fights that I think can be made in and around those weights there. And yeah, the main event, Alexis Rocha now 23-2. He was KO'd in round 6 by Giovanni Santillan, who was a big underdog, now 32-0. It was for the WBO and ABO welterweight title. Rocha down twice in round 5 and once in round 6. Very, very interesting tactics from Santillan, who just decided to get in there and, dare I say, bully the bully in some ways. I was just so surprised to see this happen, because Santillan, I'd said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I've seen him fight, and he hasn't looked that great, and I thought that miles were starting to show on his clock, and I was thinking, if he's going to get a big fight, a big payday, it needs to be now or never. And he got in with Rocha here as the big underdog, and I thought, wow, he's got himself to 31-0, and he's going to give it all away against Alexis Rocha, and then he's going to go right to the back of the queue and probably struggle to build back up to this level. But yeah, he pulls off a big, big upset and got in there, showed no respect at all to Rocha, and made him look quite awful, actually. Such a shock. Like I say, just went head on with him and bullied him, you know, just completely outgunned him. And yeah, that was tactics that probably Rocha wasn't expecting. I don't think the boxing world were expecting, but credit to Santillan, he's proved a lot of people wrong. And yeah, he certainly deserves a big fight now. I'm not sure what the big fight will be, because that's the problem at 147. There's just too many good fighters in the queue. But yeah, there's a lot of killers at that weight, so I don't know what the big fight will be, but he certainly deserves to get it for beating Rocha in this fashion. Eddie, I don't know if you saw anything at all from last week. If you didn't, then I'll just come in with, well, I welcome this week's special guest. If you did, say your piece.
I saw a very, very small amount of it, if any. I saw, you know, bits and pieces of the highlights. I just didn't have a chance this weekend. Had a couple things happen and kind of set me off to where I wasn't able to see it. But, I mean, from what I've seen, Santillan, he kind of went through him, you know what I mean? Exactly as you said, you know, he put hands on him, you know, a lot more than I would have expected from seeing Rocha when he fought
Black Ops.
Blair to Flair, and he took the Flair out of him. But I was expecting, Rocha to be much more, be able to, you know, maybe even get a knockout in this. But man, boy, was I shocked. But hey, it happens. That's boxing. You know what I mean? And theater of the unexpected.
Yeah, you can say that again. And there we go. That brings part one to a close. The final thing for me to do is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the new Commonwealth Super Welterweight Champion. It is, of course, Mr. Sam Gilley. Sam, welcome back on the show, my man.
Thanks for having me back on, mate.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Sam. So, wow, oh wow. I still can't believe the fight the other night. You become Commonwealth champion. You dethrone Louis Green. Talk me through what will go down as a York Hall classic, Sam.
Yeah, I've watched it back, and I don't actually remember it being like that. But yeah, it was a great fight, and Louis's a fantastic champion. Fair play to him. But yeah, I'm still hurting now. Like the next day, I could barely get out of bed, and yeah, I've only just started. I'm just getting, like, I can move freely a little bit more now. But yeah, for a couple of days, I've been in absolute pieces. But yeah, a fight that went down as a York Hall classic.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I was going to ask you as well if you watched it back. You said you did, which is really good. I just want to kind of briefly run through a few of the rounds. The first round, I thought you were on your way to winning that one until you got caught late on in the round. I think it's fair to say that the bell probably came at a good time just to get a little rest in. But yeah, it's a bit of a wild first round, Sam.
Well, the first round, I just wanted to, because obviously, listen, everyone talks about how hard he can punch and stuff like that. So I wanted to feel something just to gauge how hard it was. But I didn't expect him to whip me in my legs to go. You know, I mean, it was the first time in my career I've had a reaction out of my legs when I've been punched. So that was like a war. I've got to be careful here. Do you know what I mean? So that was, I mean, yeah, it was a wake-up call. But, I mean, it didn't really change too much in the fight because it was two and like, it was going back and forth the whole time, so it weren't like it changed much. I think that was the only way I could have boxed him. I think if I let him walk me down too much, I think that had just played into his favour. It looked like he was just on top of me too much. So I had to stand and go with him, which obviously means you're going to get caught. But, yeah, that first round was an eye-opener.
Yeah, and I think he's got that kind of deceptive strength because I look at him and he doesn't look like a super strong guy, but when I actually seen him in the ring, you know, he seemed really strong. Like he's got that kind of thudding power, but a lot of strength as well.
I mean, physically it weren't like, physically it was a normal strength. He was strong, but he weren't like, wow. But yeah, when he hit me, it was like a super middleweight hitting me. It was mad. And the shot doesn't travel far. This is one thing he really surprised me with. Like when you watch him in videos, it looks like he swings the punches in, so you'd be able to see it a mile off. But when I was in there, it was more like he stabbed them through, and they travelled a short distance, so they was a little bit harder to time. Where he's so crouched over, and he almost points at the top of his head at you, like you can't really tell where he's gonna throw the shot from. So he was really unorthodox as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I was keeping my eyes on the in-play odds, and obviously you were the underdog going into the fight. But, yeah, when that shot landed in the first round, I think that, as you say, made your legs react. The bookies automatically expected, you know, Louis Green to win by knockout. I think Sky interviewed some Louis Green fans in the arena as well after that first round, and they were all saying, yeah, Green knockout. I think they said round 8. I was a bit worried for you coming out in the second round, but to your credit, you boxed, I almost swore there, unbelievably good in the second round. Proper smart stuff behind the jab. I mean, I gave you rounds 2, 3, and 4, and then obviously that 10-8 round in round 5. I mean, yeah, that was the Ellis Corey special that we spoke about before the fight on WhatsApp.
it woke me up, basically, that first round. Do you know what I mean? It made me get straight on my game plan. And Rod's been saying to me the whole camp, listen, concentrate. You've got to be 100% focused, because if you have one little lapse in concentration, it can go horribly wrong. So that made me switch on to 110% from that moment. So it was, I mean, listen, it's a lesson learned, but like you say, it made me box perfectly to the game plan of what it set at up until that body shot, which, I mean, you see what that body shot done to Ellis Corey. And, I mean, Louis Green just took a knee and got back up on 8, and I just thought, oh, my God, how have you got up?
Yeah, but it was you who screamed instead of the opponent this time.
yeah, do you know, I could, but when he was on his knee, he was still breathing.
Yeah.
So I was looking at him thinking, mate, you're going to get up. I thought, oh, my God. Like, I know how hard that shot is, and people said to me on the night, they said that shot echoed around the room. Jeez. Like, it was so loud when it landed, because it landed so sweet. And he just took a knee and just got up on 8. I thought, oh, my God.
But, yeah, that was when the odds did a U-turn. Then you became the favourite in play. I gave you round 6 as well. So I thought you had a fantastic few rounds from round 2 to round 6. Round 7, though, the last minute of that fight, Green really put the pressure on him. For me, took that round. I thought that Louis Green had looked tired for ages by that point. But in the 7th was when I noticed that you seemed quite tired. I remember thinking, how is this fight possibly going to go the distance? Do you remember that 7th round quite well, Sam?
Yeah, so what had happened at that point, I'd come off my boxing because of the knockdown. I was then loading up and trying to bang him out. Yeah. And obviously that tires you out a little bit more. And after the seventh, Rod got on me and he said, mate, he went, get back on your rhythm, stop trying to knock him out and box properly. He went, even almost have a rest round, just flick, move, get back to your boxing. And when I started to relax and started to get back into my rhythm, that was when I started picking up the rounds again. But yeah, round seven, I mean, I don't know whether it was the body shots that had had like an effect, but if you watch the fight back in his corner, I can't remember what round it was, his trainer said to him, how'd you feel? And he said, I feel tired. Yeah. So, but obviously he does put a lot into his shots, you know what I mean? But I was really surprised. I mean, it's the first time I've been 12 rounds and I actually felt more comfortable doing the 12 than I've done in some 10 rounders.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I felt really comfortable in there.
And round 8 and 9, I gave to Green, and I wrote on my notes at that point, I said, the tide is starting to turn. Green had gone back into favourite in play, obviously in round 10. In round 10, he barely threw a shot, and it seemed like you kind of got this second wind, and you definitely won 10 and 11.
But maybe, then, do you know what? Maybe that was when Rod said, have a rest round, get back on your boxing. Maybe it was that one, because I remember after he told me that, I won a couple of rounds.
Yeah.
So I can't remember what round he told me, but But it might have been then. But because he had 10 and 11. It was like he had it off.
Yeah,
he didn't really do a lot.
And then in round 12, where did that come from?
But that was what I was expecting, because I knew he was just going to go, because he'd had 10 and 11 off. I knew he was just going to go hell for leather in the last round, because by that point he'd let me rack up a few points. And yeah, I was really surprised he had them two championship rounds off. But but then in them rounds, where I was relaxing, I was thinking, listen, you've got to save a little bit for 12, because he's going to come out like a train. So I had to be wary, even when he weren't doing nothing. Do you know what I mean? Because I know that he's trying to put things in place for a couple of rounds time. But yeah, there was a lot going on while I was in there.
Yeah, I'm glad that you were expecting that in the 12th, because me watching it at home, I couldn't believe, you know, he come out like a rocket. I thought, wow, he's really saved it, you know, for a big 12th, obviously leaving it all in the ring.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly though, Sam, that was such a mature performance. I'm so happy for you. And that was your coming out party at 154. Okay. I think you said it in the past that you'll be a different fighter at 154. And I think on the weekend, you properly rubber stamped that now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've completely grown into the weight now. I've had a few of the English title and that. And that was my first, like, I've arrived as a proper solid fighter. I'm ranked number 3 in the country now. I'm number 17 in the world. So that is a coming out party fight. And like everyone at Sky, everyone at Boxer was really impressed, and they was over the moon with the fight. So yeah, it puts me on the map even more now. So I'm excited for what they'll have next for me.
And also, you made reference to it a couple times already in this interview, but a massive shout out to Rod in the corner as well. I thought his advice was spot on whenever they had the microphone in the corner. Just at times, he was just simply saying to you in the corner, don't get greedy, don't get stupid. And when he said it, I felt he was spot on. I think he did a tremendous job as well in the corner. I really do.
Yeah. He almost knows what he's talking about, Rob. You know what? Even now, I'm 18 fights in with him. And I still can't, because when I first met Rod, I was one of these fighters that thought, if you haven't boxed, you can't be a coach, right? If you've never been in there. But Rod has put that so wrong to me, like, because he can detach himself from the madness that's happening in the ring and in the crowd, and he can calm situations and just give me simple bits of advice like that, but they're so effective. I don't know how he does it, but he's a special trainer.
Yeah, I think your chemistry is really, really good. It really works well. And I think he's very honest, very straight to the point. It can just be simple, short instructions, but they're bang on. The scorecards, Sam, were very wide in the end. My card
too
at
wide.
Home.
Too
yeah,
wide.
I was going to say, my card at home was 115, 112 for you. Obviously, the judges, 116, 111, 117, 110, 118, 110. I was going to say, did you think it was a bit too wide? Definitely. What did you score it at all when you watched it back?
I did think that was a little bit wide. Listen, it was they're tight rounds, but obviously Louis had some decisive moments, I had the knockdown, but I had it a little bit closer than the judges. I mean, I'm not going to moan about what the judges scored it, but I had it a little bit closer, if I'm going to be honest.
And also, it's a damn shame sometimes in boxing when two shows clash. I was watching your fight on the TV and I was watching the DAZN card on my iPad. And your missus obviously does work with DAZN. During your fight, I think she was live on DAZN interviewing Jack Catterall. And I think it was Jack Catterall. And I thought, damn, like, she's obviously not at York Hall with you. What was that like? And I'm guessing she obviously probably wasn't watching the fight live.
So she had the fight on in the first round. Then when I got buzzed, she panicked. She turned the... So I think every time I had a bad round, she must have had the fight on. And then when I had a bad round, she'd turn it off. And then I'd put together like two or three good rounds. She missed all the good rounds, but watched all the bad ones.
Please say, but she saw the knockdown.
She was... No, but do you know what? I'm not sure whether she did, you know. But because, yeah, she... Because I told her not to watch it. Because I said, listen, you don't want it distracting you and your work. Because, listen, her career's... Like, that's the job she's been wanting to get for ages. So her career is doing really well at the minute, as well as mine. So it's really important that she's on her game when she's there. So I said, listen, if the worst does happen, you don't want to be watching it, and then you've got a face like you've got a bad face while you're doing interviews and stuff. But no, she was I think she was getting like thumbs up, thumbs down from people at ringside and stuff like that. So but it was weird for me. I mean, she bought me a little cardboard cutout of herself to take to the changing room to shoot with me. But yeah, it was weird. And hopefully it don't clash too many more times. But I mean, I FaceTimed her straight away and she was over the moon.
So yeah, she missed all the good bits. So maybe when she's watching, you don't perform so good. But when she's not watching, you perform better. Maybe she shouldn't watch the next one, Sam.
maybe it's her fault. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But back to all seriousness, after such a brilliant fight, it's always classy to see two guys embrace and show great sportsmanship. It was you know, on display Saturday. Yeah, great stuff to see between you and Louis at the end of the fight.
Yeah, I mean, me and Louis had got on the whole fight week, the whole build-up, the whole, like, listen, we're two professionals, and at the end of the day, that's what we do for a living. So there was no reason to be bad blood. Me and Louis went back to the hotel. We had a beer after. We had a chat. And yeah, like, I wish him all the best in the future. Who knows what's going to happen down the line. But yeah, he's going to be a tough opponent for anyone that he fights.
Yeah, I agree. And am I going overboard by saying that this could be a contender for fight of the year? Because it looked like that to me.
I mean, listen, it could be up there, but who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But because there's been some absolute crackers this year. But yeah, we'll just wait and see. I've been in with a shout for that for a couple of times. So I'm never in boring fights. I think that's the lesson after this one. So yeah, people are starting to notice that now.
Well, it certainly stole the show. And I wanted to ask, obviously, it's very, very early, but what is next? What do you want to do? Obviously, you've got Samuel Antwi, the British champion. I don't know if you've got one eye on that. Mm. But yeah, what do you want to do?
Yeah, no, I want the British, but somehow or another, Jack McGann's been slipped in as an opponent. So even though this was a final eliminator for a British. But I suppose I'm going to have to let them fight. And maybe I'll have a defence at the start of the year because I've just got to, like I say, obviously I'm in bits at the minute. So my hands are hurting, everything. So I need to let everything heal up, and then I can get back in the gym and hopefully get a defence in at the start of the year, and then fight the winner of that. But that's what if that become available next, I'll be jumping at that straight away.
There we go. And just lastly, my last real question to you. A good fight that's been made in the division, I was going to say domestically, but actually no. But yeah, Kevin Agyarko against Troy Williamson. Decent little fight that, Sam. How'd you see that one going?
I don't know. I don't know what Troy's got left of the weight. That's my only problem. Listen, the best Troy Williamson beat, I believe, wins that. But it's all down to how much Troy can pull out of himself at the weight, because he's a big, big lad. But I wish him both all the best and may the best man win.
Yeah, should be a good one, like I say. And just finally, mate, before we let you go, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, if you want to sign out with a little message, take it away, man. The floor's yours.
Nah, just hope everyone has a nice Christmas and that, and I'll see you all again in the new year.
There we go, short and sweet, from the new Commonwealth Super Welterweight Champion. Listen, Sam, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Congrats again on this amazing win. Thanks for your time, and we'll speak again soon.
Cheers, mate. Top man.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Chris Billam-Smith is set to defend his WBO Cruiserweight World title on December the 10th at home in Bournemouth. He gets in with Matthias Mastanek, who is currently ranked number 5 in the world, and brings a 6-fight win streak into this fight here. It's going to be live on Sky Sports, obviously not pay-per-view. But yeah, interesting fight, actually. Obviously, Mastanek, former European champion. He's actually ranked number 5 by the WBO, number 9 by the WBC. People will know him, obviously, for his fights in the past with the likes of Tony Bellew. And I actually thought that Mastanek, when they announced this fight, because I'm not sure what's going on with Lawrence Okolie, that rematch don't seem to be happening for whatever reason. But when this fight was announced, I started to think, Mastanek, he's finished now. And it took me back when I saw that 6-fight win streak, and I thought, well, who's he actually boxed in that time? And, there's been a couple of decent guys in there. He's took 2 fighters O's as well in that 6-fight win streak. And his last loss was 5 years ago on points to Yuniel Dulticos. It just reminded me how tough he is, you know? He's only been stopped the one time, obviously lost on points to Tony Bellew, lost on a split decision to Johnny Muller, lost on a split decision to Yuri Kalenga. The only time he got stopped was in round 11 against Grigory Drozd back in the day. That was 10 years ago this month. So he's an extremely tough guy, and this will probably be a serious, serious fight for Chris Billam-Smith. Not one he's going to win easy. Could be a big upset here. I'd like to see the odds. And the other piece of news, it's finally been announced. December the 26th, we're going to see Naoya Inoue step in the ring with Marlon Topalez. That's going to be going down there in an undisputed junior featherweight world title showdown. December the 26th, like I say, at Tokyo's Ariake Arena. It's going to be live on ESPN Plus. So that's a Boxing Day. So yeah, all the best there to Naoya. That's it for the news. Moving on now to the preview part. We're going to start here with a card that goes down tomorrow at the Carib Royale Orlando in Orlando, Florida, USA. It's going to be live on DAZN. One fight to mention, it's the main event. We're going to see Amanda Serrano, 45-2 with a draw here already. She's defending her undisputed featherweight world titles, IBF, IBO, WBA, WBO. Actually, she's missing the WBC. I don't know what happened with that. But anyway, she gets in with Danila Ramos, who's 12-2. The reason this is a talking point is because this is actually, Eddie, 12 3-minute rounds. The first time in history that two women will be boxing over 12 rounds, 3 minutes as well. So that's something that obviously Amanda Serrano's pushed for, and very happy to see it happen.
Wait, what? Are you serious?
Yes, sir.
12 threes?
12 threes.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, we'll see how they do with it, but wow, that's a hell of a statement. I mean, it's giving them an opportunity now to really prove that, hey, I mean, we're women and everything, but as long as we're competing with each other, man, why not? And that's amazing. I'm happy to see them actually get the opportunity to prove. I mean, they already done, you know, great things with boxing recently, and got to say, Jake Paul's been right at the front of all of it. So you got to give him credit where it's due. But yeah, you know what I mean? It's good to see that this is actually going in this direction. I'm actually excited for it for him.
Yeah, a lot of people now, you know, very confident Serrano will get a stoppage here because she's got an extra 16 minutes of action, obviously. It's not 10 twos, it's 12 threes. So, yeah, but she gets in with a girl, like I say, Danila Ramos, who's never been stopped in her 2 losses. They were on points to Katarina Fanders and Elam McCallid. Yeah, all the best there to Amanda. And moving now to this one, it goes down at the Polyforum Benito Juarez in Cancun, Mexico, over here. It's going to be live on DAZN as well. Main event, Oshiki Foster, 20-2, defending his WBC World Super Featherweight title against Eduardo Hernandez Rocky, who is 34-1. Another really interesting fight. Could be a good clash of styles here, actually. I was happy for Foster when he became champion, because he's had it the hard way. He had to come up, you know, without a promoter, I think, or at least a major promoter for quite a while. Had to go over to Dubai for a tough fight. He was, I think, the underdog in that one, beat Yakubov, and then got the fight against Ray Vargas, and I want to say was the underdog there as well, and pulled off the win. First defense gets in with Eduardo Hernandez, who's 34-1 with 31 KOs. He's been knocked out in his sole loss as well, a first round loss to Roger Gutierrez just over 4 years ago now. But the crazy thing here, when you look at the statistics, obviously we know that Oshiki Foster's a really good boxer, but Eduardo Hernandez, I mean, he hasn't been past five rounds in, well, actually, he's been six rounds. That's the furthest he's ever gone. He's gone six rounds twice, and that was two times he went the distance in his fourth and sixth pro fight. Since then, and it's almost been 10 years now, the furthest he's gone is five rounds. You know, he's been banging people out in round one, two, three, you know, 5-5, 2-2, 1-2, 4-3-1, 3-2, 2-2, 3-3, 1-1, 1-2-2, 1. You know, he comes to, you know, get you out of there nice and early. He's 10-1 for a KO within the first six rounds. I think that's an interesting price. But again, I understand why it's 10-1, because Oshiki Foster is the favourite here, just slightly. And it's going to be a really good fight, I think, actually. It could bring out, you know, it could bring out some excitement in Oshiki Foster. Not to say he's not exciting, but, well, I mean, he's not the most exciting fighter in the world, I think it's fair to say. But I think the style clash will make it quite exciting here. But, yeah, should be a good one there in Mexico. And obviously, you know, Eduardo Hernandez gets the fight back home, if you like. So, yeah. It's going to be a good one there in Mexico. And on the undercard as well, we should mention Justice Hooney. He is currently 7-0 with 4 KOs. He's a heavyweight, 6'4", from Australia. He gets in with Andrew Tabiti, who's 20-1. He's been quite inactive over recent times. He lost, obviously, in his sole defeat to Yuniel Dulticos. We've mentioned him twice on this podcast. Can't believe it. He lost to him back in 2019. So it's been almost four and a half years since then. But he's only had three fights in that time. And they've been quite low-level fights. He's knocked everyone out. And he's gone five rounds, two rounds, and five rounds. But he gets in here with Justice Hooney. Like I say, obviously, he's moved up from cruiserweight to heavyweight. This will be his second fight at heavyweight, because he boxed a year and 2 months ago at heavyweight in Saudi Arabia. That was on the Usyk Joshua undercard. I think, the Usyk Joshua undercard. Was that Usyk Joshua? Obviously Usyk Joshua 2, I think it was, wasn't it? Usyk Joshua 2 undercard. So that's the last time we saw him. But he gets in with Justice Hooney. He's a massive underdog as well, actually, Andrew Tabiti. So should be an interesting one, though. I don't think, you know, Justice Hooney has really boxed anyone of note yet. So I wouldn't count him out. You know, his best guy he's beaten was probably that Paul Gallen, who's a former rugby player. I think Tabiti is definitely worth a small punt here. Can't remember what the odds are on him, but I did punt small on him. That's it for that one in Mexico. Moving now to the Suamlum Night Bazaar in Ratchadapfisek in Bangkok, Thailand, of course. Over here with Saxul Wangek, a.k.a. Suresiket Sorungvisai, a.k.a. what does he like to eat, Eddie?
A bunch of nasty bugs, as far as I understand.
Rodents.
Is that right? Or...
Huh?
Rodents, Eddie.
Oh, no, not bugs. Yeah, rodents. What they call them again? What they call them? The rat eater or something
that's
like that?
That's what I call him, unofficially.
Oh, I couldn't. I honestly, the more I think of it, the more I just couldn't do it, man. I don't know if I could do it. The only way it could be done is if that stereotype of, you know, like you put it in a whole bunch of, rice and sauce and all of that. Cover it, then maybe make it look like chicken, you know, and I don't even eat chicken, so, you know, that's kind of crazy, but make it look like fish, I don't know, then maybe you might be able to sneak in, pull it over on me. I don't know. But other than that, but if I knew it, no way. You have to pay me an obscene amount of money. Trade, trust me.
Well, if you quickly open your WhatsApp, you'll see that he definitely hasn't disguised it into looking like chicken. Have a little look at that picture I've just sent you there.
Oh, that is so wild to me.
Look at the size of the towel. The towel's going over his shoulder like an aerial on a cell phone or something from back in the day.
He got rice and a drink sitting there.
That's another rat on the plate as well, if you notice. There's two rats.
Yeah, I know. And I'm looking like, what? He said, forget eating one. He's like, man, I eat two or three of these. Oh, no, sir. Not for me. I couldn't do it.
Heck of a fighter, though. You know, some fighters like to drink their own urine. This guy, you know, likes to eat rats, and it does him well. He knocked out Chocolatito twice. So, yeah, he's back here. 53-6 with a draw. It's going to be his 61st pro fight. He gets in with a guy called Sukhprasad Ponpitak, who's 28-17. It's over 6 rounds there at bantamweight. And moving to, dare I say, the big one, Tyson Fury steps in with Francis Ngannou in the main event in Saudi Arabia. I don't know if you want to say much on the main event, Eddie. To be honest with you, I am not going to add too much to it because I just don't know a thing about this Ngannou guy. Heard he's a massive puncher, but obviously not a boxer. But if you want to say something on the main event, you can, and I'll move to the undercard.
Honestly, the only thing I know about him is, you know, pretty much what you know about him. I know what he's done in MMA. He won the title in a short amount of time, but he's a vicious puncher. But in MMA, he's not really have the boxing ability, anything that I know of, to do anything that's going to force Tyson to have to make any real crazy adjustments. But is this an actual fight or is it an exhibition? I'm under the impression it was probably, I think it was an exhibition. And I'm hoping for the sake of both fighters that it is.
Do you know what? I should know, but I'm not entirely sure. All I do know is it's a 10-rounder. So, I don't know.
Well, I hope it is. But, yeah, I don't really have much on it. I mean, you know, what I expect, obviously, is even if this is an exhibition, what I expect it is, Tyson to just play with him for, you know, a number of rounds. Obviously, got to stay safe. You don't want to take any chances. But, I don't really think there's too much going on with this fight other than, you know, Tyson slapping him around for 10 rounds.
Well, we'll see. But, yeah, on the undercard, some of the, I guess, real fights, if you like, we're going to see two undefeated British heavyweight bangers collide. We're going to see Fabio Wardley, 16-0 with 15 KOs, get in there with David Adelaide, 12-0 with 11 KOs. Quite excited for this one, actually. There's a lot of bad blood, obviously, between the two, and I believe it's a 12-rounder as well. Quite excited for that one. I don't think we're going to see it go the distance, but I'm not entirely sure which way it's going to go. I think Fabio Wardley, obviously, is quite explosive, likes to start fast, but I don't think his gas tank's all that good. I think David Adelaide will probably be the stronger of the two and probably has a better chin, but he's quite slow, and sometimes it can take him a while to get going. I think Fabio Wardley has a few chances early on, maybe. But I wouldn't be surprised if it turned a little bit in Adelaide's favour as the fight goes into the later rounds, if we even get there. But either way, I can't see these guys going 12 rounds. I think there will be a stoppage one way or the other. David Adelaide for the stoppage is just under 4-1, which is quite interesting. What else do we have on that undercard? This one here, this is really, really, I think, going to be quite one-sided. We're going to see Arslanbek Makhmudov. He's 17-0 with 16 KOs. He steps in there with Junior Anthony Wright, who, by the way, is a huge, huge underdog. His record is 20-4 with a draw. He's got 17 KO wins, but he's been banged out 3 times in his 4 losses. Got knocked out in 2 rounds by Joe Jones. Don't know who that is. Lost on points to Ruslan Feifer 6 years ago. Got stopped by Bebut Shumanov back in 2016. So, yeah, he was a cruiserweight at one point. Oh, yeah. And then, yeah, got stopped as well by Rakim Chakiev back in 2015. Hasn't really got any big wins. It's just mainly big losses. So, yeah, they're expecting this one to probably be over within the first couple of rounds. Makhmudov, you know, massive guy, you know, comes to waste absolutely no time, and I believe may even get a first round stoppage. I think it's going to be, you know, that conclusive. I just don't give this guy a chance. That's the thing about Makhmudov. I enjoy watching him fight because he's a little bit vulnerable, to be honest with you, but he just gets in there and tries to get it done straight away, and he, you know, you can't really blink when it comes to him. Also on the card, we should mention as well, the young prospect, Moses Itauma, 5-0 with 3 KOs. I was at his last fight. He got a first round knockout against Amin Buscetta. Here he gets in with Istvan Bernaf, who is 10-1 with 8 KOs, 1 stoppage loss. He got knocked out in his last fight, actually, in round 4 by American journeyman Terrell Jamal Woods, who's one of the only, you know, heavyweight journeymen out there. But, yeah, was able to knock out this guy here. So I'm expecting Moses Itauma to do the same, to be honest with you. I don't think he's going to have too much trouble with him. Also on the card as well, we've got to mention it, it could be quite interesting, actually. Martin Bacoli, 19-1. I like to say that one loss, as always, was to Michael Hunter. He gets in with Carlos Takam, and I think this could be quite interesting because Carlos Takam has been in some fantastic form of late, even though he's 42 years of age now. You know, we mentioned him a moment ago there. Arslanbek Makhmudov definitely deserved to beat Makhmudov on the cards. I think there was something fishy going on there. Should have won that fight. And then last time, springing the upset against Tony Yoker as well. So he's coming into this with some serious momentum. But like I say, gets in with Martin Bacoli, who is the big favourite. They really expect him to win. I don't think he's going to have it easy, though. I think, you know, you compare him to some of these other guys. Obviously, look, both guys got in there with Tony Yoka. And, you know, Martin Bacoli took Tony Yoka's O. But I think both guys beat Tony Yoka, both pretty much by decision, because they both went the distance with him. I think that, obviously, they've got very different styles. And that's not all I'm basing my point off of. But Takam's so experienced, so tough. And when he's got his head screwed on, he's a real problem. And I actually think he's going to cause maybe a few problems. But I do think Martin Bacoli, you know, he uses his size quite well. He's 6'6", so he's tall in stature. And I think he's got, you know, quite a few skills. I'm not sure how I can see it going, really. I can see it going late, though. I don't think Bacoli's going to go in there and stop him or anything like that in the first 6 rounds. No way. I think we're looking at a Bacoli points win, or a Takam points win, or a very late stoppage for Bacoli. That is how I think I see it going. I'm pretty much covering a lot of bases there. But what I'm trying to say is Takam is weirdly looking quite better with age. And Bacoli, you know, he doesn't impress me super duper. This will be, on paper, one of the toughest fights he's had. And, yeah, it's not going to be easy for him against Carlos Takam. Takam gives everyone a fight, to be totally honest. What else do we have? We've done that one, done that one. I think it's the final one to mention now, actually. Yeah, we're going to see Joseph Parker, former WBO heavyweight world champion, friend of the show. Probably should have got him on the show, actually. But yeah, anyway, 32-3, his record. He gets in with Simon Keen. Yeah, just want to touch on this as well. Simon Keen, he's a big puncher as well. 23-1 with 22 KOs, 1 KO defeat. Again, you know, not the best fighter in the world. Hasn't really beaten too many great fighters. Only 4 years ago, ended up going 10 rounds with Sergei Lyakovich, for God's sake. Managed to knock him out in the 10th and final round. But yeah, he's not fantastic. Went 9 rounds with Sean Del Winters. In his last fight, he actually went 7 rounds with Eric Molina. Who we know, you know, has been banged out in a round or two you know, he's pretty much retired now. I think he may even officially be retired. He's retired a couple of times, I think, Eric Molina. But anyway, Simon Keane's not the best fighter in the world, but he's going to go in there and give it a go, of course, while it lasts. Joseph Parker, however, looked really bad. Not last time out, actually went back last time out. He went back to Australia and got a nice quick first round knockout in his last fight. But the fight before that looked awful against Jack Massey. He was really, really disappointing against Jack Massey. I'm happy that he's had one fight in the meantime, gone back and got a knockout there. Maybe he needed that going into this fight here. But yeah, I don't see that one going the distance for obvious reasons, but could be interesting while it lasts. What else do we have? I think that is that card as well. We're going to also see, I think, one or two other fights that are not really worth mentioning on that undercard. And then, yeah, moving to the final two cards to mention. They actually go down next Tuesday. It will be Halloween night. It will be Tuesday, October 31st. But by the time these fights finish, next week's show wouldn't have come around yet. So we'll be reviewing them next week. Got a little bit lost there, but we're going to see Jordy Wise 30-0 with a draw. It's for the EBU European welterweight title, which is currently vacant. He gets in with Spain's John Miguez, who's 17-0 with a draw. So both guys never lost. Somebody's El must go. That one goes down at the East Space Mayenne, by the way, in Mayenne, France. Probably saying that place wrong. And then the final card to mention, it goes down at the Kurokian Hall in Tokyo, Japan. We're going to see former world champion TJ Doheny, 24-4. Coming off a big upset victory last time out, he was able to beat and stop Kazuki Nakajima. So, yeah, he's back out in Tokyo at the same place, the Kurokian Hall. This time he gets in with the undefeated, oh, I'm going to struggle with this name here, Jafefli Lamido, who's 11-0 with 4 KOs. Couldn't tell you much about him. He's actually, he says he was actually born in Long Beach, California, but lives in Japan. Couldn't tell you nothing about this guy, but all the best to TJ Doheny. Very underappreciated fighter who last time out showed and reminded us that he's not done just yet. And all the best to him out there in Japan. But yeah, anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the new Commonwealth Super Welterweight Champion, Sam Gilley. Then in part two, we did the news. We've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 419 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the new Commonwealth Super Welterweight Champion, Mr. Sam Gilley. Fantastic fight that he had on the weekend at York Hall, a real classic. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.